have a clip for you this morning that perhaps many of you have seen already, but I wanted to share with you. And what I want you to take particular note of, although for me it's the most difficult point, part of the clip, is the audience reaction. This is a clip from a show called Britain's Got Talent. And it's a show in Great Britain, similar to American Idol or like Star Search from back in the day, a little bit longer ago. And back in my day, okay, a little bit longer ago. And it's a talent search, right? And so they go looking for folks who audition and have a talent. Could be anything. This particular audition is in song. And the winner, you know, once they find some good people to compete against each other, then the winner gets some sort of prize at the end. 15 minutes of fame plus something else, I don't know what. Money, big time money, contracts for performing whatever talent it is. And so this is the audition, the audition that's been, remember, it's a reality show, which means it's not actually reality. It has been edited together to try to highlight and heighten the surprise of the moment. But pay attention to the reaction, the before and after reaction of the crowd. It's, for me, it's hard to watch, but I think there's purpose in learning from it. There she is. Susan Boyle, 47 years young. And as we'd later learn, Susan was at the time unemployed, no longer. Surprisingly, she has a record contract already, whether or not she wins. And when she was employed, previous to that, she worked in a church. Now, there's a boring thing to do. Take it from someone who knows. No. But what a, you know, not where you expect a diva to work. Not where you expect the next Elaine Page, whoever that is, or Britney Spears, or whomever, to suddenly spring up from. But although that gives me goosebumps every time, what I like about it is not even so much the underdog story or the ugly duckling story or the sneech without the star on its belly story, but there's something really satisfying about watching that crowd, which is so rude at first. They're just, they are so ready to laugh at her. They do laugh at her. They whistle at her. They make fun of her. The guys in the back wag their hips like her to try to, you know, make her comical. And they roll their eyes and they jeer and they giggle when she says that she wants to be a professional singer. And there's something so refreshing about watching them have that totally flipped around and handed right back to them like, yeah, deal with that. You are so wrong. And I think that in part, deep down, there is in all of us, there certainly is in me, the relatively pudgy, frumpy, unpopular, awkward person, kid that nobody wanted to play with or whatever, who secretly, or not so secretly, delights in seeing those judgmental jerks learn their lesson. In fact, I'm going to judge that whole audience. I'm going to prejudge that whole audience as being nasty people. You see, I'm a much more compassionate person than that. They look at her and they judge her immediately as someone to be scorned, someone to be laughed at. And by the way, had she opened her mouth and it not have been stellar, it still would not have been okay to laugh at her. That still would not have been a kind thing to do, by the by. I mean, it's a wonderful story because she opens her mouth and sings and nobody expects how wonderful and beautiful it's going to be. But had she not done that, would it have been okay to just draw entertainment from the fact that she was an awkward woman? No. But here they are, and I'm going to judge them, this audience and that row of judges and Simon with his snarky little comments all the time, as being nasty people. And I'm much better than that, of course. One of the things I've learned about four-year-olds, I've learned a lot about four-year-olds lately, but one of the things I've learned is that they have within them, I think, all of them it seems, at least, seems to me, they have within them this us versus them mentality, this inside versus outside mentality, this, you know, star-bellied sneech versus plain-bellied sneech, or you know, star and hero and role model versus, you know, ordinary, everyday, uninspiring person. Or best friend versus not. With Ariana, this usually comes out as who's invited to her birthday party. Forget that her birthday's not for another 10 months, but that's not important. When she's mad at you, Mama, you can't come to my birthday party anymore. When she's happy with you, Papa, you want to come to my birthday party? Or when she comes home from school, Jenna hit me today. Jenna hits her a lot. I'm going to have to talk to Jenna's mom. Jenna hit me today. I'm sure there's somebody who has to talk to Ariana's mom about hitting too. Jenna not come to my birthday party. Or Jasper's my best friend. I'm going to marry Jasper when I grow up. He can come to my birthday party. She's also real big on the boys versus girls thing, and she'd count how many boys are in the room and how many girls, and she likes for all the girls to be sitting together or doing the same thing because boys are icky. Whew, glad we're still in that stage. I'm not ready to move out of that anytime soon. Boys are icky, and girls are cool, and we like to play with girls, and we like to hang out with girls because girls are us, and those are them. Boys are them. My friends are us, and the people who can come to my birthday party, or Frankfurter parties, as Dr. Seuss puts it in this niche story, are us, and everybody else is them. Wonderful, beautiful, talented starlets, people we want to look at and listen to and be like when we grow up, they're us. They're in the in crowd. And regular, ordinary people or people who seem a little awkward or poor or like they haven't had a makeover or whatever it is, they're them. And we separate. There's something about that that's kind of inherent to who we are. I mean, because kids do it, so it's kind of a natural thing. Childish thing, but a natural thing. And probably also served a really great purpose when we lived in tribes and smaller communities, and we really needed to distinguish who were the people that were part of our tribe or our organization or our little culture so that we could know who to be safe with and who to kind of be wary of. But we don't really live in that world anymore. And yet we maintain that mindset in a lot of ways. And I'm not just talking about laughing at or automatically or immediately dismissing someone based on their appearance or based on a rumor that we heard about them or a single action that they did 10 years ago or something like that. I mean, we do it a lot. And Jesus knew that. Jesus knew that this was part of our human condition. And he addressed it. He addressed it a lot. But he didn't address it only. He did address it in parable and in story a lot of the time, but he didn't only address it in terms of examples or metaphors about snitches or singers or rich and poor or any of those things. He also went right to the heart of the people he was talking to their most sacred assumption. And he addressed it there too. And the most sacred assumption in the Jewish community at the time, and particularly for Jesus' followers, I bet, was that we are God's chosen people. That's point one of the Jewish faith. I am the Lord, your God. Point one. We are God's chosen people who God brought out of Egypt, who God formed as a nation, who God has a special love for. Even as we've been destroyed and oppressed and gone astray, God always calls us back. We are God's chosen people. And we could, from our perhaps slight distance in history, relatively speaking, look upon the Jewish people and say, gee, how exclusive of them. But that's baloney, because we do it too. I think every Christian community has always done it. I think every religious community of any kind has always done it. We get it right. We're the ones who have the market on it. We know what God wants. We are God's chosen people. We're doing it right. We're on the in. And the rest of them, well, they're not on the in. They're on the out. They are snitches without stars on their bellies. They are frumpy-looking singers. They are not coming to our birthday parties. And so Jesus goes right to the heart of that. And he says to his disciples even, I mean, not, you know, his disciples, they're walking around, they're following him, they're hanging on his every word, and he says, I have other sheep who are not of this flock, not of this sheep pen, and I have to go and call them, and they will hear my voice, they will know my voice too, and they will come to me, and there will be one flock, and there will be one shepherd. I don't imagine that went over 100%. Because I imagine that while that was an inspiring and wonderful thing to hear. It was also a deeply challenging thing to hear. For some reason, our sense of us being on the in feels diminished when we consider that there aren't as many on the out. For some reason, our sense of feeling popular and secure and like we have talent feels diminished if there's not somebody else we can laugh at who's not part of that group. And that's a weakness in us. That's not a weakness in God or in the way God made us or in the shepherd and who the shepherd called. That's a weakness in us sheep. In us sheep who feel that in order to feel secure in our pen, in our flock, we need to be able to point at the people outside the flock, not wolves, not predators, not something to be afraid of, other sheep in other pastures and other flocks, and point at them and say, well, they're not part of our flock. And therefore, they don't get to share our shepherd. We want to keep them for ourselves. We understand him better than they do. We hear his voice better than they do. He's our shepherd. We're on the in. A recent poll research thing shows that Vermont, congratulations to us, is the least religious state in the country. Now, I don't know what questions they asked to come up with that. Like, how do we come in below Nevada? Burlington, you know, ain't Las Vegas. So I don't exactly know how that worked out. What question was asked? You know, do you go to church regularly? Was that the definition of being religious? Or are you a religious person? Do you identify as having a religious affiliation, a denomination, or a faith perspective? Are you must identify as being Christian or Buddhist or Muslim or, you know, however the question was asked. I'm not quite sure. Maybe they had too large a sample from Montpelier. Or from Burlington. I'm just going to pick on cities at random. Maybe they had too large a sample from somewhere. I mean, it's not hard because our state's so small. Maybe that, you know, they got a misrepresented sample or something. Or maybe not. Maybe people just don't define themselves religiously. But we know that folks are still pretty spiritual and pretty religious or religiously inclined, but perhaps might not have answered that way. Still, it would be pretty easy for us to say, well, we are the diamonds in the rough, you see. We are the rarities. We are the exceptions to the rule. We're the ones on the in this most religionless of states, in this least spiritual or least Christian state or whatever it is. We are the ones on the in. And they're on the out. But you see, that's not a judgment for the sheep to make about one another. That's not a judgment for us to say about other people any more than it was up to the judges, really, to say whether someone has talent or not, to say whether someone has value or not, to place value on another person based on what we might assume about them because of how they look or a rumor we heard or something they did once that we witnessed, however long or short ago, and to make a decision or a judgment based on that and determine that we are the sheep of God's pasture, and they're not. Because what we do is we neglect, then, to see the beauty in each person. We neglect the possibility that the shepherd might still be speaking to them, calling to them. We neglect that it is the shepherd who calls, that it is the shepherd's job to bring the sheep together, and not the sheep's job to determine where the edges of the pasture are. What songs might lie unsung inside the folks that we've written off as talentless? What joy and celebration might there be in the presence of those we didn't invite to the birthday party? What value and blessing and sameness might we find in the people who look different because of the stars on their bellies or the clothes on their backs or whatever else it is. When the shepherd calls all of the sheep, will we be ready as a part of the flock to open ourselves up to the love and the blessing and the talent and the joy of others to welcome other sheep of God's fold into our pasture? Into their pasture. Amen.